Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
Welcome to Formula Y, the official F1 podcast that helps you find out even more about the sport we all love by answering your questions. I'm Katie Osborne, and this is Christian Hugel.
And this week's question comes from one of our listeners, Luke in South Africa. Hello, Luke. Thank you for your question. Luke asks about pit stops and why they're so important and how they work.
Great question, Luke. Man, there is so much to get into with this one. Pit stops are a famous, iconic part of F1, and over the years, they have given us tons of thrills.
Oh, we got the fuel hose on Kovalainen's car.
Oh, there was a fire in the pit lane as well.
Oh, look at the pit lane's closing. Hamilton has hit the back of Kimi Raikkonen, but Hamilton has smashed into the back of Raikkonen on their way out of the pit stop. When Salo came in a moment ago, they had both slicks and dries ready for it.
Right rear.
They're not ready on the left rear. There's no tyre. Right rear, I beg your pardon, there's no tyre here.
I've never seen anything like it.
Oh, I thought we had one when the race started, he's saying. Well, this is ludicrous. This is
ludicrous. Now we're going to have a committee meeting about it. Stick it on and send him out.
Into the pit anyway. Comes Lewis Hamilton. He goes straight on into the gravel track. Can he keep the wheel spinning? Can he get some momentum going?
No,
he can't. It's all going to get away from him.
Oh, and fuel. That's the first time we've had a fuel splash. Oh, my goodness me. Well, now, just let's keep calm. There are a lot of fire officials down there.
Oh, no! That's a big mistake. Massa's gone. He's taken the hose with him as well, I think. They've got the spare hose ready. And that is the race leader, Felipe Massa, who has made a catastrophic mistake.
Podiums, race wins, even world championships can be won or lost in the pit lane. They might be, in most cases, though, the slowest part of a track.
But don't think for a minute that it means they don't see any action. Quite the opposite, in fact, as you've just heard. By the end of this week's episode, you'll be a Formula One pit stop expert with the help of Haas driver Kevin Magnussen. He'll tell us about the driver's role.
We'll go from Haas to Alpine to their pit stop performance expert, Connor Swan. And don't think we're exaggerating here, friends. We've also got a fascinating interview with the woman who literally revolutionized the world of pit stops in F1.
Yeah, you may not know the name Gemma Fisher just yet, but trust us, she changed the game. She is basically responsible for the super fast F1 pit stops we know today. But before all of that, back to basics. Why do pit stops happen in Formula One and why are they so important?
The first thing you need to know is that pit stops are an essential part of an F1 Grand Prix. In a dry race, drivers must pit to change those tires. The rules say drivers have to use at least two different types of tire compounds in each Grand Prix. And if you don't, you will get a penalty.
So if a driver starts the race on the yellow-striped medium tire, at some point they have to come into the pit lane at least once to change to the white-striped hard or the red-striped soft.
Drivers can also pit if their cars are damaged. Some bits of bodywork, like a broken front wing, can be replaced quickly at a pit stop. Or, if they get a puncture, the only place to get a new set of tires is in the pits. One thing that doesn't happen anymore, though, is refueling.
Yeah, that's been banned since 2010 because it involved a lot of expensive equipment and a fair bit of risk. Now, each car starts with a full tank of fuel that will do the whole race, so there's no need to refuel. We're going to talk about everything that happens during a pit stop and who makes up the pit crew a little bit later on.
Now, generally speaking, drivers want to pit as few times as possible during each race. And that's because every second they spend driving slowly in the pit lane or sitting still while their crew go to work, it is time not spent at full racing speed.
But at some races, in hot weather where tyres degrade or wear out quickly, it's actually better for drivers to make two or even three pit stops to make sure they're always on tyres that have plenty of grip.
And as we said in our episode on why racing in the rain is so hard, Wet weather can lead to all sorts of pit lane drama as drivers change from dry to intermediate to wet tires, depending on the conditions of the track.
Yeah, a little example of that. Germany 2019. Max Verstappen won the race.
And after 64 of the best laps you'll ever watch, it's Max Verstappen who wins the German Grand Prix. His seventh win in Formula One.
After pitting five times, swapping from wet to dry to intermediates, more intermediates, then back to dry, the Red Bull crew earned their money that day. Let's just say that.
Isn't that the truth? No matter why a driver pits or how many times they do it, they want each stop to be as short as possible. So many things have to be done flawlessly. And the first piece of the perfect pit stop puzzle is down to the driver.
So let's speak to one. Would make sense, wouldn't it? Haas driver Kevin Magnussen. He has raced in roughly 150 Formula One races, give or take a few. So he's dived into the pits in an F1 car literally hundreds of times. I would say that makes him more than qualified to talk to us about it, wouldn't you, Katie?
I'd say that's probably right. And Kevin told us what he's concentrating on as a driver when he gets the call to box, box, box.
As a driver, you don't think about, you know, all the choreography that actually is going on between all these mechanics that are taking part in the pit stop. All you do is just focus on what you have to do as a driver, you know, stop at the right point, get the gear, you know, release the clutch. You're just sitting there. Once you've stopped at the right point, you're just looking at the lights to go out and waiting for them to go out, and then you're trying to release the clutch to the right point so that you can optimize your launch out of the pit box. And so it's fairly simple from a driver's point of view. I don't seem to ever notice whether it was fast or slow pit stop. Of course, if it's very slow, then I notice it. But because you're so focused on just doing your thing, you almost don't notice the tires going off and on again. It's kind of just stop and go.
But we mentioned there's so many people involved, and you mentioned stopping at the right point. Like, it sounds really simple, doesn't it? But if you brake a few tenths of a second later than you want to, you can move forward a bit, and that can throw off a whole pit stop, can't it? We're talking tiny details here.
We're not only talking like tiny details, it's people that you're parking the car, you know, centimeters from. So, you know, you really don't want to push the limits too much. In that case, you want to just get safely through and not hurt anyone. And, you know, you're stopping, I don't know how many people there is, but you're stopping centimeters from their knees and hands. You know, and they're sitting down, they can't just get out of the way. So they're putting all of their life in your hands in a way. And so, you know, it's not something that you try and push too much. You're arriving at 80 kilometers an hour. It's not far from speeds that you're doing on like a highway in your road car. So, you know, it's fairly extreme. So you try to just take care of people and get safely through it.
How's your parallel parking game on the real streets?
It's okay, I guess.
I can't even fathom, like, I think about it in my car, just like the little bits and pieces, and those are cars, right? Those are not humans' feet and fingers and everything that your knees and everything you're talking about. I'm just like trying to like envision it from that point of view.
Sounds like Katie might have scraped a few walls in her time.
My car is in pretty good shape, to be fair, but it does take, I mean, I could not come in at highway speeds into anything and try and parallel park. Pit stops are so short. They're not really, it's not really a time and a place to sit there and take a break, is
it? No, it's, I mean, the going through the pit lane at 80 kilometers an hour is kind of relaxing, I guess, but it goes so quickly that it's not really a real break. It's not really a break, but it's kind of
So the pit stop is not that place for a reset. Let me think about something, what I eat for lunch or whatever.
Yeah, it happens very quickly. You know, before you know it, it's over and you're on track again with new tires and having to push again. So I think it's an exciting part. You know, it's strategically also something that's always has some exciting element to it as well. You're hoping that you're coming out in front of those guys that you're racing or something like that. You know, hoping you got the right tire compounds and your strategy right. So it's an exciting element.
Kevin, always great to talk to you. Thanks again for stopping by Formula Y.
A short but sweet appearance from Kev, and largely, Katie, because if we're honest, as Kevin said himself, the job of a driver actually is one of the more simple ones in an F1 pit stop.
Yeah, it was just like an F1 pit stop. In, out, got the job done.
Absolutely. So as Kev said, the job of a driver is stop exactly on your marks. Don't hit anyone on the way in. That's very important. the instant they've come to a stop, the pit crew get to work.
Right, now let's break it down. Every team's pit crew does things a little bit differently, but they're all made up of about 20 people.
Yeah, and the first thing that happens is the car gets lifted up by two people using specially designed jacks. There's one at the front and one at the back. Once the car is off the ground, the tire teams can do their thing.
Yes, now that's 12 members of the pit crew that are all about tires. Each corner of the car has three people crouched around it. The first has a wheel gun. They unscrew the nut that attaches the wheels.
The second takes the old tire off.
That third one puts a tire back on.
Then the one with the wheel gun makes sure it's attached properly. The precision you need to do all of that perfectly in literally 2 seconds is incredible.
Meanwhile, a mechanic with a special wrench adjusts the front wing if the driver wants to change the downforce, or they might reach into the car's side pods or brake ducts to remove debris.
Another stands at the back with an engine starter, ready to fire up the car if it were to stall.
Yeah, now while all of that happens, two people stand on either side of the car and hold it steady. They are so important. If that car is not wobbling around, it's easier to put the tires on.
And watching, waiting for the split second when all that work is done, is the mechanic who gives the driver the green light to go back out into the race. If the stop was all good, they could have gained the position in the order.
Now, in a good stop, all of that happens in 2 seconds. Guys, that's like now to now. Amazing. But it absolutely cannot happen unless a team of 20 work in total harmony. And that takes organization. Enter Gemma Fisher. Now, Christian, when you met with Gemma, I was away covering a motor race, more than likely standing in a pit lane, ironically. And trust me, though, I am jealous of this one.
Yeah, we missed you, Katie. But Gemma is actually incredible. She really is.
She's going to explain exactly what she does and how she has transformed the world of F1 pit stops. She nowadays heads up a company called Formula Health, which helps people involved in elite sports with fitness. She left quite a mark on Formula One, and this is what happened when Christian welcomed her to Formula Y.
Thank you very much. Thank you for inviting me on.
It's absolutely our pleasure. Now, Gemma, you're going to be one of the voices we hear from regularly on this podcast. This is your first appearance. So tell us a little bit about what your job is, because I don't think I've ever interviewed a Formula One human performance consultant before. I love that as a job.
Thank you. Well, I mean, someone did actually say to me once before, do you realise you're the only person in the world with that job? Which I'd never really sort of taken a step back and thought about it like that. Yeah, so my background is in health and human performance, in emergency medicine. I'm an osteopath, work with integrated medicine, everything from acupuncture to the clicking and cracking of your backs to nutrigenetics and looking at how the entire human body works and looking at that on a high performance level, but with a background in motorsport.
Which begs the question, given this episode is all about the wonderful world of Formula One pit stops, how did you move from all the wonderful things you just mentioned, the clicking of backs and the human body, to Formula One pit stops? Where does your F1 pit stop experience come in?
Essentially, I was headhunted into F1 by Pat Simmons. So when refueling had been removed from pit stops, Pat obviously looked at that and thought, well, actually now pit stops have become a huge strategic part of the race.
And for those new to Formula One, just explain who Pat is.
So he was the technical director of Williams at the time, and he's one of the big names and a very highly respected figure in Formula One that's now leading the way with a lot of the changes, the new regulations that you've seen across Formula One in recent years. So yeah, so he was one of the first people that was kind of pioneering in that thought process that actually we need to know more about all of these people that we're throwing out in front of the car in the middle of a race. You know, everything there is to know about the car, but we know nothing about these 23 or so people that are involved in a pit stop. So it was Pat that thought, well, we need somebody that knows about the human body and motorsport that can try and make sense of all of this for us and can try and figure this out and actually take a look at this for us. So it was Bruno Senna had been one of my drivers in Aston Martin at the time in endurance racing. Yeah, he was also one of the sim drivers, development drivers for Williams. So he made a recommendation to Pat, and he'd got in touch saying, heard about the work that I'd been doing in endurance racing and got in touch, and it went from there really. And it's absolutely escalated, you know, from where pit stops were and what went into it back then to what people see on screen now. It's transformed.
So in the early 2010s, we've got a situation where Pat Simmons brings you in at Williams and presumably says, we want to make our pit stops quicker because they're so important to the wider race. They can make or break a race. They can be the difference between a podium and a race win, points and not. What did you do first? What did you change when you came into this environment?
As you can imagine, a team where, and then in all the teams, okay, so the driver was only really the only person that got looked at and sort of critically analysed. So then to have someone come in and turn around to all of the mechanics and all of the people involved in a pit stop, and all of a sudden, all of their human performance and every aspect of what they're doing within a pit stop, I was going to get critically analysed and looked at under a microscope.
I bet you were popular.
You can imagine I was enemy number one. So it obviously presented its challenges when we first started. But like anything, you know, you earn your respect. And obviously when these things start to pay off and people can see the difference you're making, and obviously the results spoke for themselves, then, you know, things do get a little bit easier. But yeah, I'm not going to lie, it was a little bit tough to begin with. So obviously you had to look at, you know, every aspect. In some ways, there was no point looking at the humans and starting to go really far down that avenue and looking at nutrigenetics, people's sleep patterns and the human performance element and all of the detailed things that we've done later on. You couldn't even look at it yet if they didn't have the tools to do the job properly. So on the human side of things, we at least started to put in actual gym training. I actually built a gym there at the centre. We had an old one at Williams. So, you know, partnered up with a company, put in a brand new human performance centre, treatment rooms. So then obviously I could then treat to full assessments and medicals as well. Then on the equipment side of things, that's when we really had to go under the microscope with the equipment and the training protocols, because at best, a lot of teams would only have a bit of pit stop practice when they were trackside. So we looked at how we even go about the training, how we go about practicing. So we could go from a basic pushing the car in and doing pit stop practice in the car park at the factory up to actually designing and implementing a rig which would fire in one corner of the car to be able to then practice pit stops, change various settings and go through the motions and really break it down step by step. So there was a lot of work to do.
So it feels a little bit to me like the changes you made at this point were on two sides. There was one, the equipment side of things with better, I'm presuming, more modern equipment, but then also the human side of things. Just give us a few examples of what you changed in terms of the people.
A lot of the people that you're working with, they haven't joined Formula One to become an elite athlete. They've joined Formula One to be a mechanic that's absolutely at the top of their game, and they love motorsport and love what they're doing. They're fantastic at what they do. And so the challenge there was essentially you're set to work with people who, for 99% of the time, they're a mechanic. They're working long days. They're working 18-hour days. They're on economy flights. They are bent over double under the car and working extremely hard to do the brilliant job that they do under a lot of pressure, and then expected to perform like an elite athlete for a very small percentage of their time, but a very critical amount of time during a race. And various ages, backgrounds, experiences, you know, they might have already had hip replacements, knee replacements. They might have been doing the job for so many years that they've obviously, you know, picked up a few injuries along the way. So there was definitely a lot of priming to be done to sort of optimize every individual that were there. You know, in other motorsport, you'll have, you know, ex-American football players that are kind of drafted into just, you know, purely for pit stops. So this was a very different challenge, and that's why you have to be versatile to adapt to each individual person.
So sometimes it's making them fitter, sometimes it's making them more agile. So you're sort of taking each individual pit stop crew member and working how you can get the best of them, is what it sounds like to me.
Absolutely, 100%. Because, you know, you're not making, pit crew members out of a test tube. You're presented with a team of people that are already there because of their high skill set on the mechanic and the engineering side of things. And then you are tasked with creating an elite crew that can perform under pressure, that can do their job in a split second, consistently can perform no matter what. We would treat any previous and existing injuries, but also look at them, look at their biomechanics, look at where they're likely to incur injuries, where they're likely to have problems further down the line if we don't address this at this point. So it's to be proactive and preventative as well on a treatment side of things, looking at anything that they're doing with their diet that might be pro-inflammatory, that might not be helping them with jet lag strategies, helping them with even cognitive performance, and looking at brain training, looking at hand-eye coordination, eye tracking, looking at every single aspect that person needs in order to do that job in that pit stop that's so crucial.
You've mentioned that you came into the Williams team in the early 2010s and made these changes. I've heard from other people in Formula One that other teams spotted these changes and wanted to duplicate that. And I know you then worked with other teams like Alfa Romeo, for example, in making changes.
Yeah.
If I can make a bold statement, sounds to me, Gemma, like you were one of the very key people behind sort of transforming Formula One pit stops into the modern age. So, and I know you'll be modest about it, but is that a fair comment?
Yeah, I think it is, really. I'm not really one for, I don't take praise very well, but yeah, that I'd say it probably is, because if you look at what pit stops were when I first started to where they are now, and all the process, it was a learning process for us all, as you can imagine. I don't have an engineering degree. I was problem solving, diagnosing, and working out the best ways to approach these things as we go along. So it's literally a case of looking over the garden fence. They would see what was happening down at Williams. We did have to giggle because they knew that I was something to do with, she's an osteopath and she does human performance stuff. So yeah, I think we need one of those too. So you'd start to then see different kind of trainers popping up because, as I mentioned, I was the first person of this particular role to be assigned to a team. The drivers had their one-to-one who would be a strength and conditioning coach, and a couple of physios and now a few more osteos are popping up. It's nice to be able to see. But the teams didn't really have that person that was there for them. So we thought, we'll get ourselves a physio or a trainer or someone to do something with fitness. That'll do it. But they obviously didn't realise that I was intrinsically involved with the equipment and everything as well. And behind the scenes, we'd be taking wheel guns apart. We'd be looking at, taking the front jack apart, redesigning the rear jack. So it was quite amusing when you'd see the effect of looking over the garden fence to see what was going on.
Because we should also say that around that time in the early 2010s, we obviously know Williams, unfortunately for them, in the last few years have had some problems and have been running towards the back of the grid. But in the early 2010s, this was a team regularly in the hunt for podiums with the likes of Felipe Massa and Valtteri Bottas. And you were obviously a part of that success and a part of those podiums. I'm guessing there was an element in those early days of looking at pit stops and evaluating them after the race as well, analysing them and going, right, we could be doing better at this, and watching videos and that sort of thing.
Yeah, well, that didn't really exist to begin with. And you're absolutely right. So they became such a critical part of the race. And maybe you don't notice it as much when you're at the further down the grid, but when you are, as you said, fighting for podiums and podium positions, that is, such a key part of the race, and it's crucial for strategy as well. So strategy also need to know that you can deliver consistency. They need to know what time it's going to take to do a pit stop and be able to rely on it in order to plan when they're going to, pull the car in for a pit stop. So it's absolutely crucial. The pressure is really on when you're up against it and you're, like you said, you're competing for, for podium positions. When I first started, we didn't really have any form of feedback analysis. There wasn't really anything in particular to look at in order to analyse because we didn't have any data. The only data we had was essentially total pit stop time. So you'd know stationary car time. That was it. And at best, you might have somebody there with a stop clock and manually timing what they thought the pit stop time was, which obviously is not overly accurate. So that was something that was one of the things that I looked at initially, was how can we improve something if we don't know what we're trying to improve? We've got no data points, we've got no numbers, we've got no focus on where we're going to improve. So we need to have the information in order to know where we can improve and where we're losing time, where can we optimize, where can we make improvements. So that was one of the first challenges, was, okay, well, let's now start to actually put sensors on the equipment. Let's actually start to look at and what are the individual aspects of a pit stop? What makes up a pit stop? So that's when we started to then break it down, including the driver in lap and the pit lane performance. But pit stop specifically, you know, you'd look at the time before the car's pulling into the pit stop itself, so into the box. You'd look at the driver car entry, the trajectory of the car. You'd look at the positioning, box positioning, the driver performance element of that. That's obviously crucial. And then break it down into, you know, the gunning off period. So you'd look at how long it's taken to actually gun off the wheel nuts. You'd look at the jack up times, the front jack, the rear jack, any delays, any problems with the equipment there. So in an ideal pit stop, the wheels are actually undone before the car's even stationary. So then you can jack up the car, remove the wheels, a crossover time between the wheel off and the wheel on, gunning back on again, and then releasing the car and the jack drop times as well. And then obviously on top of that, you can put your driver reaction time from the point at which he's seen the green light. So that was the first challenge, was how do we improve something that we've got no information on? So first port of call was put all of those data points in and make sure we're acquiring data from, you know, dropping the airline pressure, for example, to know the point at which we can make those improvements.
And how soon after making these changes did you start to see the pit stop times come down at Williams?
Yeah, I mean, it was pretty much immediately, really, because I basically had a blank canvas to play with because there hadn't really been any focus on this. So it was great. I could really get my teeth into it. I could start to find the points at which we could make these improvements and then look at, you know, set about how we're going to do it. And obviously, because it was so critical to team performance, it became high priority. So, we developed an engineering focus team that would meet regularly based on this. So we would do a pit stop practice session. We would then go away, gather all the data. Obviously, it was quite manual acquiring that data to begin with before we managed to set up automating that process to analyze the data for us. And then we'd go through the detailed analysis of, okay, is this equipment fault? Is there equipment design that we can make improvements? I would then translate that across to the mechanics and the team as well. And then so you've then got the pit crew analysis, which then we started to bring in video analysis. We'd start to look at movements of the individuals, the kind of the choreography of the whole pit stop itself. You know, what was the reason? Why did that happen? Was that equipment fault? Was it human error? Obviously, these are humans involved, you know, so there is going to be an element of human error. But if it was, we're not persecuting that person for making an error once. We're going to look at why has it happened? What can we do about it?
And Gemma, just finally, the result of your work really did pay off, didn't it? Particularly at one race in 2016. The sub-2-second pit stop. Just explain what happened and also how that must have felt to see the result of your hard work pay off.
Well, it was, you know, obviously absolutely amazing, really. And also it wasn't, you know, just that race. I mean, the good thing and something that we were really focused on was consistency. So there was no point in us delivering just one fast pit stop, whether that's in one race or across a season. So what was amazing that season was, I think it was 16 or so of the races that year that we were the fastest. So it was making sure that consistency was delivered every single pit stop in every single race. But that was just, the icing on the cake, really, because for that to happen, the sort of synchronized harmony of everything and every single component working perfectly and all coming together at the right time, that's what makes a fast pit stop. But the results speak for itself. So it felt like a bit of a proud parent moment, really. Yeah, we're all very proud of that. And it's amazing to obviously see all the work and everything that goes on behind the scenes and all the hard work coming to fruition to deliver results.
It's been such a pleasure talking to you. We've learned so much. And will you come back and speak to us again? We'd love to have you back on in the future.
I'd love to. Yeah, speak to you soon. Thank you so much.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
Christian, that was so awesome. Loved hearing Gemma's story. And wow, there really aren't many people who have made such a big contribution to Formula One.
Absolutely. And also just driven it forward so much. Listen, I make no secret of the fact, I think F1 is the best sport in the world. one of the hundreds of reasons why I love it is because it's full of people like Gemma, innovative, talented, like actual game changers who spot opportunities which ultimately make a massive difference to a driver's race. It's amazing.
Absolutely, Christian. The best of the best. And she taught us so much about how getting the most out of a human being can have such an impact. The better people perform, the faster the pit stop. And Gemma's legacy in F1 continues to this day.
That's right, Katie, because it has shaped the job of people like Connor Swan, who is our final guest this week. While Gemma nowadays, after many years on the road and in the sky, can enjoy seeing a little bit more of her friends and family by being based in the UK, Connor from Alpine is fully involved in the F1 circus.
Connor's job is a little unusual and changes from midweek to a race weekend, but he is the main man behind Alpine's success in the pits. He's their pit stop performance coordinator. So when Esteban Ocon and Pierre Gasly box, no one is watching closer than Connor. He caught up with Christian and started by explaining what his job involves.
My original role, and still is to some degree, is performance coach, human performance coach. So you'll see every driver has one. It's a little bit less known that pretty much every team has one as well, or two. So we obviously cover sports therapy, pit crew training, and then some of their nutrition side of it. Pre-season, we go into depth with that a lot more. But when we're at the track, we have very little time as the mechanics are obviously busy working. So it turns more into, I guess, a pit stop trainer role. So we will train the guys specifically for pit stops from Thursday up to Sunday. And the idea of moving up to a pit stop trainer was because kit takes so long to develop. So you could look at 1 year, 2 year plus on developing new pit guns, rear jacks, front jacks. You're trying to make up that small difference with the men you have who aren't initially hired for pit stops. They're hired as mechanics. So our role is to train them into a position we think they'd be best suited, whether that's wheel on, wheel off, or rear jack guys.
And of course, time is of the essence. Like a 1 or 2 second difference to you and I having this chat isn't going to make a difference. But 1 or 2 seconds in Formula One is massive, right? Which is where pit stops become even more important.
Yeah, it can make a world of difference. So obviously, the quicker the pit stop, the more chance you have of getting back on the track in the place you were originally. The average we used to do was 3.5 seconds, and we now do an average of, say, 2.2, which when you talk to someone outside of Formula One, that doesn't sound impressive at all. But when you look at it in regards to how many places that makes up during a race or how many it stops you from losing, it is quite a phenomenal time.
But also to do the sheer amount of stuff you do in 2.2 seconds is insane. We'll dig into that shortly, but I want to take you back now to what you said before about equipment and people. Let's focus on the people first of all. How do you train those people to get that time down? Because that's fundamentally what you're looking to do, right?
Yeah. So ideally, you'll have people that are naturally, I'd say, built for that role. So the rear jack man has to be strong. So you couldn't just throw anybody in that position. You've got to have someone that fits that role. So when the car comes in, it's full of fuel still. So the car weighs 500 kilos plus. So lifting the whole car for that one man, you are essentially lifting the back with the engine and the driver in it. And then obviously the tire on and off guys ideally would be on the smaller side, but also strong because they need to be close together. They work in a very tight environment. So you need people that can fit into such small gaps while being strong enough to lift that 20 kilo tire.
And is your job a bit like a football manager? Are you assessing who goes where in this operation?
Yeah, so pre-season, we sort of try and fit people into where they work best. Obviously, we're limited. We have 25 active people on the pit stop, and that is what we're given to work with. So out of 25 people, you won't find exact matches for positions. So we try and train them pre-season into being at least strong enough and mobile enough to fit into specific roles.
You've sort of put your team together. Let's say if we're using a soccer or a football analogy, you've sort of put your starting 11 together. Is that the same every race? There's 23 races in a Formula One season as of 2023. Is that the same group of people you're working with race in, race out?
For our team, it is. So we don't rotate staff at the minute. So the only time we ever replace someone is if there's an illness or injury. And we've got a couple like backup guys that are trained in nearly every position efficiently, but it is normally the same 25 or so people that are in those positions throughout the whole year.
All right, so we know how you're arranging your team. You've got your smaller, more agile guys at the front wheel where it's cramped. You've got your big muscular person at the back lifting the car. But how do you prepare? How do you train? How do you work to get these times down? Because I think more casual fans of Formula One might not take into account that this is a training exercise, that this is not just a case of rocking up to a race weekend and doing a pit stop, but this is drilled in, isn't it, to a huge extent?
Yeah, so most of the training does come in as muscle memory. So we'll train at a circuit Thursday to Sunday, but then pre-season we're training in the pit stops every day. We allocate an hour a day for pit stops. It can take 20 minutes, it can take an hour sometimes. And if there is an issue, we stop and assess it. So we work out whether it was a mechanical fault or whether it was an operational fault, which is a issue with one of the people. Once we've worked that out, then we can obviously work out who needs to look into it. If it's a mechanical fault, it goes to another guy that I work with that sorts all the in-depth, like technical computer side of it out. If it's operational, it'll come to me. We've got cameras to look down on everything, so we can see what they did this time compared to what they did last time, and then potentially, obviously, switch their position, things like this. What I do and what we do as a team is change the training slightly year on year and to better reflect what there is to come for that year as well. Obviously, we're doing 23 plus races now, which is a lot more than we were doing 6 years ago. So we try to keep volume down so we don't burn the staff out, but we're trying to keep quality of the stops higher.
We've done a full episode of Formula Y on the driver's fitness. We know how fit these drivers are. Are your pit stop crew also having to do similar sorts of training regimes? I'm guessing you mentioned earlier the guy, the jackman who's jacking up the back of the car has to be strong. I'm guessing there's weights training for him, but is there a physical fitness element to this? Is there agility elements? How much are these guys training?
To be really honest, when I first started in the team 6 years ago, there wasn't much training. There wasn't any real buy-in for keeping fit. I guess being fit for a pit stop it's a fairly new thing, I guess, for Formula One. We don't make training mandatory in our team. I guess a lot of other teams do. I think that comes down to motivation. At least 85% of the team will willingly come to training sessions, or they'll train themselves with obviously some guidance. My main training focus now has changed to just keeping their rest and heart rate at a healthy, low level while having them at least be mobile enough to shift the tyres.
So I'm guessing in terms of getting these pit stops time down, which is of course so crucial, does that come down to the fine margins? Does that come down to analysing those cameras you mentioned earlier? How are you getting these times down?
I guess they're all physically, they all know what they're doing. A lot of them have been doing it longer than I've been in Formula One. And they've been doing pit stops, like what they'd have done hundreds, thousands more. So it's ingrained in them. But a lot of it comes down to, are they motivated to do pit stops or not? We found the biggest difference is just the motivation levels. So hence why bringing the stops down from maybe doing 60 or 40 a day down to doing 10 or 20 a day has given us such a big improvement in times. So yes, they need to be fit and healthy, but they need to want to do it as well, which sounds really corny, but it does make such a difference.
But that's sport, isn't it? Motivating the team around you. It's such a key part of sport. And we've spoken a lot about the people. What about the kit that you mentioned at the start? We hear the wheel guns whizzing round, for example, during the race. How powerful are they and how strong do you need to be to use some of this kit?
When you first hold the gun and you pull the trigger, anyone that comes in and has a go on pull it, you'll know you've got to hold it tight. Like that thing wants to jump out of your hand. As soon as you pull the trigger, it wants to throw your arm round. And obviously, if you're trying to hold it steady to line up on a nut that's about that big, you've got to have a decent amount of upper body strength to hold that gun steady while the torque wants to move your arm outwards. You do get used to it, I guess, fairly quickly, but when you're new to being on the gun, it does have a bit of kick to it. And we do find, because of the strength of the kick of the gun, it gives a lot of the gunmen tendonitis in the elbows. Yeah, so a lot of what I do in the week is with especially some of the gunmen are more prone to it than others, but it is making sure that the tendonitis is bearable. I guess because they do it so often, it's an unavoidable injury to a certain degree. It's something that we try to train out and make the area strong enough, but because they're doing it so often, and things like lack of sleep obviously make it worse.
And I'm guessing you mentioned about the kit bringing times down. I'm guessing the higher quality that equipment that you're talking about, the quicker the stops can be, and that comes into investment in the team and budget and that sort of thing.
Yeah, so we've done like an ergonomical gun, so it's easier to press the button. It's an obvious light now, so there's a light ring around the gun that has multiple colours depending on what the scenario is. So if there's an issue with the gun, if the nut's done up properly, or if there's a inhibit, so if the gun hasn't tightened the nut hard enough, then it won't send the car out with a loose tyre. Now we're pushing kit better, we are starting to bring the times down through, I guess, a joint collaboration of mixing the human performance with the kit. Whereas before it was, here's your gun, we've got to train you to use this bit of kit that probably doesn't work well, like for your personal needs.
And during the race, Connor, where are you? Are you on a pit wall analysing? What happens with someone like yourself in your role during the race?
During the race, I'm a water boy. So I will be running in and out to get drinks for the pit crew as they get restless.
All this responsibility, Connor, you have in the week, and all this analysing and all this training up the team, Formula One can keep you grounded at times, can't it? Back to being the water boy on race weekend.
Yeah, I mean, it is a humbling sport.
How much pressure is there? Formula One is a team sport, and we obviously most famously see the drivers under pressure. But, you know, as we have seen, pit stops can make a difference between first and second, between a podium and not, between points and not. How much pressure do you guys in your team feel, and how do you help them deal with that pressure?
So we've got a green and red light. When the red light comes on, they know they've got about 40 seconds before the car comes in. When that green light hits, you can see the nerves go up quite a lot, especially if you ever get the camera angle of the guys trying to take the blankets off the tyres. Yeah, there's a bit of panic there when sometimes it doesn't come off quite as easy.
Say someone makes a mistake, because we see it in Formula One, it does happen, and it's like an individual member. You know, we do see sometimes when the driver spins it and hits the tyre wall, you can see when they come back to the pits, the pats on the shoulders and sort of the team rallying around the driver when they've made that mistake. Does a similar sort of thing happen with the pit crew if someone makes an error?
Yeah, so errors happen. We do so many pit stops, something's going to go wrong at some point. Obviously, everyone knows no one sets out to make an error. Like you, when you go out to do a pit stop, you want to do it as quick as you can and as best as you can, because you're on TV. When there's an error, it gets picked up. People on the internet could be fairly ruthless.
Oh, yes.
But yeah, accidents do happen. We were lucky. We've not had any serious accidents yet. When it happens, it happens. They own up to it quite well. If it's a mechanical issue, obviously that gets picked up. And then it is just the case of it was a mechanical fault that went wrong during the race. And that gets looked at by another team, like a faults team. But if it's a person issue, we'll go through why it happened. Or if they know what happened, if they just didn't press the release button quick enough, they'll just put their hand up and say, look, I made a mistake. And then it's a case of, you know, we were trying to do it again, but there's no one gets torn apart for it.
Is there a rivalry between pit crews up and down the paddock?
I'd say there's probably more of a rivalry of the pit crews on either side of the car. We look at DHL's fastest pit stop time at the end of a race. We also have a bit of friendly rivalry, I guess, on either side of the car. So the left front wants to be quicker than the right front. It's like a friendly competition. Like sometimes on a Thursday, we'll play around with it as well and we'll do pit stops. We will say like the fastest corner gets to come off and they can have a rest. And then we'll go down the line until we're left with the slowest corner that might have to do a forfeit.
Go, what are the forfeits? Go on.
Like push-ups, things like that, or... Or each person on that corner then has to do a pit stop completely by themselves. We try to keep it friendly because we don't need to interrupt like on a Sunday and then they race each other too fast to make a mistake. So we try and keep it grounded, but some friendly competition on each corner does make for quicker times.
Oh, I love that. And I'm imagining, to pull it back finally to the team, when you guys nail it on a race weekend, when you get the quickest pit stop of the weekend, that must be a great feeling, right?
Oh yeah, if you can hear the mood in the garage, when they do any pit stop that they're proud of, it's a nice environment to be in for that one. They spent pre-season, they spend all of this time doing pit stops, and then when they get a really, really good quick pit stop with everything goes smoothly, it is a good feeling.
Connor, it's been lovely having you on Formula One. You've taught me an awful lot. Thank you very much for coming on.
Thanks for having me.
Well, Christian, we've both been watching F1 for decades. We've watched literally thousands of pit stops, and yet there's so much I've never thought of before about such an important part of the race.
Absolutely. And one of the reasons we wanted to do this podcast was to get the people on who you don't normally hear from. And Connor and Gemma of exactly that. So a massive thank you to them. And of course, to K-Mag, who may get a little bit more of the limelight, what with being a driver, but always great to hear from the peddlers, isn't it, Katie?
Yeah, that's right. We hope you learned as much about pit stops as we did. And me and Christian just want to say thank you to everyone getting in touch to not only tell us what you think about the podcast, but also suggesting those future questions that you want us to put to our experts.
Yeah, and the best way to get in touch is ywhy@f1.com on the email. No question is too big or too small, so here are just a few of your messages.
Yes, lots of these messages came with questions which we will answer in future episodes. We do promise. We've just got so many to get through.
let's start with Elizabeth from Chicago in Illinois. She says, I'm a recent law school graduate and I'm starting my career in the sports industry. You're more intelligent than me, Elizabeth. I am now an F1 fan because of Drive to Survive, despite my European partner telling me to watch for many years. I'm so excited for this podcast and to learn more about the back end of Formula One. Thanks, Elizabeth.
And next we have Leonard from Tanzania, who says, hi, I appreciate all the things I learned from your podcast. It has been helpful understanding more of F1. My question is on reserve drivers. Why don't we get to see them in action on a race weekend? Well, Leonard, if you get a chance to listen to our episode on why F1 teams need simulators, you'll hear from an F1 reserve driver. Part of the reason why we don't see them in action at race weekends is because they're on a sim working behind the scenes on race setups.
I'd like to do a full episode on reserve drivers, Katie. I think Leonard's given me a good idea there. Let's get some reserve drivers on.
Down.
Yeah. On to Pedro. Pedro says, hello, everyone. Big fan of the podcast. The amount of info on tyres and the driver's fitness was awesome and very informative. By the way, love hearing when Mika Hakkinen drops in. Oh, we are big Mika Hakkinen fans on this podcast.
Oh, yes, we are. Next, we have Ashraq Salahuddin. He says, hey there. First of all, you guys are doing a great job with the podcast for new fans like me. I look forward to this now every week, and I have lots of questions regarding this in-depth sport. Thank you, Ashraq. My question is, what makes these street circuits so different from a race circuit that the strategies change? What exactly is the difference? Thank you. Ashvak, our episode on street circuits is the one for you, my friend.
Yeah, scroll back down your feed, have a look at that. I think that will answer your questions, Ashvak. I like it when people get in touch and suggest ones we've already done, Katie. It means we don't have to do any more work. It's great.
I'll still talk about it with you, Christian.
And finally, Kelly in Liverpool, closer to me, says, I am loving this podcast. Like many, I'm fairly new to F1 off the back of Drive to Survive and now fully obsessed with all things F1. I'm currently just absorbing all the info I can on the sport so I can understand it better. And this podcast is helping me so much. Kelly, you are very welcome. And if you are new to F1, there are a few things you should do. You should follow F1 on social media and YouTube for race highlights and exclusive videos. You should download the F1 app or head to F1.com for the latest news. You should subscribe to F1 TV if you can get it. And of course, listen to all of F1's official podcasts. There's F1 Beyond the Grid for in-depth interviews, F1 Nation for race previews and race reviews. And if you're not following us at Formula Y, make sure you do, and then you will never miss an episode.
Christian, you are so full of good advice there.
Thank you, Katie. I appreciate that. That's nice of you.
Yes, and remember to keep those emails and your questions coming. We love hearing from you. That's y@f1.com. And if you can leave us a good review wherever you get your podcasts, we'd really appreciate you even more. Thanks to Kevin, Gemma, and Matt. Thanks to you for listening. So for me and Christian, until next week, bye for now.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique Studio Plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your Studio Plus suite today at livepreferred.com.